I try to focus on hope and I try to identify the things that are hopeful. It's very hard to do that at a time when people feel threatened. You can easily lose hope, but hope is not optimism. Hope is action, rolling up your sleeves. So there are things we can do, and we do not want to be paralyzed.
At Home with Growing Older is a nonprofit organization which believes in peer learning and creating discussions which bring the lens of aging to a variety of topics. At Home with Growing Older is proud to be your host of At Home on Air, a radio hour offering connection, community, and knowledge to our participants remotely. Now, we invite you to listen and learn from this live recorded episode of At Home on Air.
Welcome to At Home on Air. I'm Susie Stadler, an architect by profession, the executive director of At Home with Growing Older, and the producer of this podcast. In our interviews, we explore the meaning of being at home with growing older from two angles: how we can adapt our living environments, including our cities, to better support us as we age, and how we can continue to cultivate a sense of belonging within our communities and ourselves. These explorations are made possible through the insights of inspiring guests from the arts, architecture, medicine, social services, and beyond, and through comments and questions from you, our listeners. Thank you. In this third episode in our interview series with changemakers, people who have made and still make a difference in our lives, by telling untold stories, thinking differently, and most of all, caring deeply for the well-being of others, we are joined by Rick Moody. Rick has been a changemaker in the field of aging for many years. He has written a seminal textbook for gerontology students, and before his retirement was the vice president of academic affairs with AARP. His latest book just published is Climate Change in an Aging Society, the topic of today's conversation. Welcome, Rick. Thank you for writing this book, and thank you for sharing your insights with us.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. According to the results of the latest national poll on healthy aging, which was just published, 74% of people over 50 have experienced an extreme weather event in the last 2 years. 59%, two-thirds of respondents, reported being concerned about the impact of climate change on their own health, and 74% are concerned about the health of future generations. So Rick, in your book, you talk about the importance of hope. Hope is a driver of action, even if we do not know the answers or solutions. Can you say more about this in light of these facts?
Yes, I can say more about it, and specifically about those numbers. They're good numbers. As it turns out, there's all sorts of folks my age, I just turned 80 last month, and much younger, who are concerned about climate. That's the good news. The bad news is, how come things aren't changing? Why aren't people listening to this? If all these people are concerned about that, if they're experiencing these extreme weather events and all the problems and they're concerned about future generations, what do we do? That's the practical question. That's the question that I'm preoccupied with. What do we do?
What do we do is a key question. What other questions should we ask to get results?
We should ask the question of who is in a position to make change. In many cases, people like me, I'm a little person, right? What can I do? Just one person. The first thing that I can do is to confront my own pessimism, my own complacency, my own sense that maybe it's too late. Maybe the horse has left the barn. Climate is in a bad condition. We're not going to meet the UN designated aim of 1.5% and all the rest of that. If that's true, then people will become passive. So the big enemy of climate action is complacency. Part of that is the idea that somebody else will solve the problem. There's people in Washington, they're working on it, people in foundations, universities, wherever they are. Somebody else is going to man the picket lines and take the action. I don't think so. I'm of an age to remember the Grateful Dead, Jerry Garcia. He was quoted as saying, "Somebody has to do something. It's just incredibly pathetic that it has to be us." But it does have to be us. It's nobody else. People in the past may have contributed to it. My parents, for example. My father was a World War II vet. My mother was concerned about things. They're not here anymore. I'm here in California for only one reason. I moved from Boulder, Colorado, to be near my children and, above all, my three grandchildren. I'm concerned about them. I'm concerned about all of us. We need to mobilize.
Yes, mobilizing is a good call to action. In your book, the role models for mobilization, maybe not in the exact way you would expect, you call them eco-elders. For instance, you name Jane Fonda, Jane Goodall, Joanna Macy, Louise Mumford. Would you call yourself an eco-elder? And what is an eco-elder?
I'm an eco-elder in training. I'm working at it. I work at it every single day, including today. I send 50 digital messages to media managers, political leaders, business executives, people in a position to do something. I'm less in a position to do something. Yeah, I can go on protest marches. I went on one just last month, Stand Up for Science. I've been on many demonstrations. I often question, do they work? But I answer, yeah, we got on television.
So, Rick, some of the eco elders like Joanna Macy are not going to go to a protest march. Of course, it's her age also, but tell me a little bit what inspired you about her and why you called her an eco elder.
Joanna Macy is interested in Buddhism and has been for many years. She's also translated Rilke. That's not the reason why I pay attention to her. I pay attention to her because she is interested in hope and she's interested in action. I've never met Joanna Macy, but Kathleen Schumacher, who is the director of the organization Gray is Green, has worked directly with Joanna Macy. I'm the board president of Gray is Green, which was founded 15 years ago by a retired Yale professor. I went to Yale originally. I didn't know him at Yale. I met him much later on. He lived to the age of 100, but when he was 88, he said, "We got to mobilize older people." He was a political science professor, and he did it with Gray is Green. I had the great good fortune to introduce Jane Goodall to the AARP annual conference, 20,000 people there. And she's an amazing person because when I talked with her backstage, I learned that she travels 300 days a year. She's 90 years old now, by the way. 300 days a year doing what? Going all over the world to connect young people with elders. And that's my primary goal right now. I'm not going to be around that much longer, but I care about my grandchildren and I care about the young people I work with. They can help me and I can help them. That's what I believe in very strongly.
Rick, another eco-elder you had a personal experience connecting with as a younger person was Louise Mumford. Who is he?
That's a question because at some point, very soon, most people have never heard of Harry R. Moody. That's my real name, Rick Moody, whatever you want to call me. We'll all be forgotten. That's okay. But we have to do our job now. And when I was 30 years old, I was living in New York City. I was teaching a course on the crisis of civilization at New York University. And I wrote a letter to a man named Louis Mumford. He was a very prominent person. He had a column in The New Yorker, and people all over the world knew him. When I met him, he was a little old man, 80 years old. Shouldn't say that. I'm 80 years old myself now that I think of it. I was 30. He was 80. He didn't know me from anybody. He immediately replied to my letter. He even called me Dr. Moody because I had a PhD or something. Come see me. So I drove up to Amenia from New York and spent an entire day with him, hearing the story of his life. And at the end, he said to me, "You know, it's the young people who are going to make a difference." The young people. I was one of them. And that's why I believe in intergenerational connection. That's exactly why I believe in it.
What is the language of climate action? What words should we use to bring about results to connect with others?
Well, that's a big challenge, particularly with what I said earlier about complacency, because a lot of people say, well, we've seen some of these bad things happening. They're in the papers, they're on TV, whatever, fires, floods, but they haven't happened to me. Now, here in California, where I live now, we're vulnerable to a lot of climate disasters and extreme weather events, but they're all over. I call them the four horsemen of the climate apocalypse: fire, flood, drought, and heat wave. All four of these are happening, not in every place, not to every person, but they're going to happen to us. I thought it wouldn't happen to me. I'll be honest and admit that I thought it. I said, well, okay, the fires are somewhere else in California, not near me. Floods, I live on high ground, 200 feet above the Bay Area. And then one evening, actually, I can tell you exactly when it was, December 31st, 2022, seeing our grandchildren during the evening, we were driving home. My wife and I got caught in an atmospheric river. All the other cars were left and right in Burlingame. We were driving through. We were trying to get back to our home. We didn't know if we'd make it. There were people who died in that. It wasn't supposed to happen here. Climate change is somewhere else. That's something I write about in books. No. It was happening to me. And 2 years before that, I went on a march, a climate march, with 226 young people, part of Sunrise. But they admitted the old people to come too. As a matter of fact, they wanted more old people. That doesn't always happen, but these folks did. They were going on a march a couple hundred miles, and they happened to be passing through San Francisco. I joined them. During that trip, I found myself walking next to a woman in a park ranger uniform. And I talked to her. I said, well, where are you from? She said, well, I used to live in Paradise, California. Paradise, that sounds like a great place. Her house burned down there. The homes of elders who lived there, huge proportion of them, burned down.
In the face of all these events, you use three words.
I had a chance to get to know Ram Dass. He was very helpful to me in all kinds of ways. Here, now, you. It's going to come for you or the people you care about and know about. And the last word is hope. Four words. Here, now, you hope. Because the first three are the threat, and the last is action. David Orr, the environmentalist, who said, hope is a verb with its sleeves rolled up. I'll say it again. Hope is a verb with its sleeves rolled up. What does David Orr mean by that? He means action. He doesn't mean optimism. He doesn't mean optimism. Optimism is something different. The very first thing you said to me today, you quoted those statistics about public attitudes and elders concerned about climate. Yeah, they're concerned. They're in the forefront. But what are they doing? What are we doing? Young and old alike. That's what concerns me. Vaclav Havel, the great Czech advocate, now deceased. Vaclav Havel said, optimism is not what counts. What counts is hope, and hope means working for things even when you don't know what the outcome may be. You can't be sure what the outcome may be, but it's certainly not pessimism. It's too late. What can we do? The climate's getting worse. The oceans are rising. Fires are happening. I could spend all day talking about those. As a matter of fact, when I was elected to be the president of the board of Gray is Green, which is based in Connecticut, where I went to college, I was talking at a senior center. This is going back 15 years now. I gave my speech about climate and disaster, one after the other. And as I was leaving the room, leaving the senior center, an older woman comes up to me, shakes my hand, looks at me, says, oh, Dr. Moody, what you said was so powerful. I'm just glad I won't live to see it. I'm just glad I won't live to see it. That's a kind of pessimism, isn't it? It's too late, but thankfully I'm going to die soon. That's not the right answer. The right answer was the one that I learned from Reb Zalman Schachter. Not everybody knows his name, like Lewis Mumford or Jane Goodall, but he was a famous guy. He was a rabbi, lived in Boulder, Colorado, where I lived. We were in a coffee shop one day, and Reb Zalman, he looks at me and says, you know, Rick, this aging business is really very simple. I said, really? He said, yeah. He was an elder at the time himself. He was maybe my age. And he said, the only question is, are you saved? And I looked at him and I was puzzled. I thought, he's a rabbi, he's a clergyman. What do you mean? He says, no, I don't mean it in a theological sense. I mean it in a computer sense. Are you saved? Are you saved? Have you done your legacy work for future generations? Are you working for those who will survive us? That was the message that he gave me and many other people. He called it saging, from aging to saging. Are your actions saved? And we can't be sure of the outcome. We can't know that. That's what Vaclav Havel meant. I'm sorry for quoting all these other people, but they've said it better than me. So I take what they've said and I transfer it to other people. That's what I do in my newsletters and all the rest of that.
You know, it seems like it's an unsurmountable mountain, climate change. You sort of feel like I don't have control anyway. It's a global issue. As ordinary people, what are some actions we can do?
What you've just described is the inner voice, the inner dialogue. Now, in meditation, and I'm a strong believer in meditation as a spiritual practice, we learn to listen to and disregard the inner voices, the inner talking, including the voices that tell us you're helpless, you're powerless, you'll never do anything, it'll never work. I say, yes, it can. And here are just three things that you can do. The first is, are you old or expect to become old? Expect to have a pension? Where's your pension money? Where's the money in the bank? Money, that's the first. You can deal with your own money. The second is you're a consumer. You can do things for what you buy. Right now, there's people who are trying to be boycotting certain companies and support others. Well, maybe you can do that. Maybe you can't. Do you eat? Do you have food? Partly with my wife's prodding, we've now become vegans. Not 100%. It's hard, but no more dairy, no more meat. Why? Because those things contribute dramatically to carbon dioxide. You can do that. There are alternatives. So consumer choices is the second thing you can do. And the third thing you can do, maybe the most important of all, is join with other people. Maybe they're at a distance. Third act, I signed up to become a member. Eventually, I found myself on the same platform with Bill McKibben, who's the founder of it, a great man, a true eco-elder. So you can join with others and you don't have to do it far away. You can do it tomorrow, Fridays for Future, which was founded by the Swedish activist, Greta Thunberg. She's only 20 years old now. And she looks at the elders and she says, you should be ashamed. You should be ashamed. I'm not a big proponent of shame and guilt because I don't want people to think that they're the cause of it all, but we're the cause of part of it. If you're like me, 80 years old, that means you've lived your life consuming a lot of resources. That doesn't mean you have to go into a monastery. You don't even have to become a vegan. But do something. Join with others. As soon as you join with others, you will find them reinforcing you.
Linking to this join with others in the National Poll on Aging, which I quoted in the beginning, there's also the call for action that older adults, families, and their support networks consider developing an emergency preparedness plan together. It's also about joining together, preparing for the unknown. You can't do this alone. People have to have each other's back and look out for each other. So emergency preparedness plan is part of joining together.
In this house where I'm sitting right now, you'd be able to see the closet where we have our go bag. Why do we have a go bag? Because I live just 2 miles from the San Andreas Fault. If it's not the San Andreas Fault, it'll be something else. We're all vulnerable. We're all vulnerable. How many times do I need to say it? They buy fire insurance when the flames are coming out of the window and the house is burning down. We can't wait that long. We can't wait that long, and we don't need to, because some of the things that people need to do are simple, are easy. You don't have to be a hero, you don't have to be a saint, but you have to do something. And you have to give up the idea of complacency and pessimism and all the negative thinking that paralyzes you.
Also, the way you do, I think it's important to talk about it.
Yes, it's true. Every week I publish a climate newsletter that goes to 1,200 people. It's free. Everybody who I can reach will get it, and then it'll go to the 5,000 people who get my Human Values and Aging newsletter. I try to focus on hope, and I try to identify the things that are hopeful. It's very hard to do that at a time when people feel threatened. You can easily lose hope, but hope is not optimism. Hope is action, rolling up your sleeves. So there are things we can do, and we do not want to be paralyzed. Sometimes you might have to stop reading the headlines, reading the stories. I don't do that. I don't go on a news fast because my job is communicating to a lot of people in books and articles and newsletters and things like that. But not everybody needs to do that. Here's a message that I have. Don't think about what other people are doing. Don't compare yourself to other people. Don't think, I'm not as big as Jane Fonda. I actually met Jane Fonda once. We were on a platform together at a conference. She's a very nice, ordinary person. People who are big shots are actually ordinary people. They're like you. They're like me. We can do things. We don't need to become a celebrity. We need to do the thing that's right in front of us, the one thing needful.
Rick, in this context, you inspired me today. You know, we do this Aging 360 workshop, empowering participants to make real simple adaptations to their home, shifting a pillow or a chair or putting up a better light to make it more age-friendly. So I think we should add reaction or climate change to our curriculum, raise awareness, what can people do, the simple things people can do in their homes to mitigate the results of climate change. Most of us live in older homes. They're not energy efficient. They have old windows, and most people cannot afford to retrofit their homes. So what little things can you do to make your home readier for the results of climate change?
It's a great question, and my wife and I ask ourselves that question all the time. We live in a multifamily house, a condo with 50, 55 units, and we don't have control over the electrical system, over the water system, over a lot of things. But we have some control over our own individual units. So we invested quite a lot of money, actually, in replacing the windows so that they would be energy efficient, because we knew perfectly well that we're losing the energy, whether it was heating or cooling or whatever it may be. And we were able to replace gas with an induction coil in the kitchen. And we'll soon, I hope, replace our gas heating in the hallway, but that will not change the gas heating for the entire building. And it will not change the water system for the entire building. So people who live in multifamily houses, as opposed to individual houses, will have limits on what they can do. Money is also a limit. We had enough money to do it, but not everybody does. Not everybody does. Don't aim for something that is beyond your capacity. Aim for the things that are within your capacity and do those things. It's hard enough to do those things.
You are listening to At Home On Air. We are now switching to questions by participating audience members in this recorded live episode. If you want a chance to ask your question, visit us at homewithgrowingolder.org and register for the next live episode.
So Dave asks, what advice would you give elders to actually support younger people to get out and protest if you can't do it yourself? And what can this support look like? How can elders support younger people to take action?
Link with groups that already exist. And there are groups that are doing exactly this. For example, Third Act has joined with the Civic Center all around the United States in a program they call Seniors to Seniors, in which they have senior citizens, people like me, meeting with high school seniors who are 17 years old, may be 18 years old and eligible to vote. And the job of Seniors to Seniors is connecting the young and the old for a specific action, voting, registering to vote, and then voting. Where I live, there's a whole network of several hundred, all young people, all people in high school or college. Silicon Valley Youth Climate Action, it's called. We've met with them. We work with them. We need to connect young and old. I'll give you another example, a negative example. When I was in Colorado, I was one of the founders of a group called Indivisible. We established it in February 2017. And so we talked to some people in a youth climate advocate group. They didn't want to have anything to do with us. They wouldn't talk to us because they said, "You're to blame. You're the old people. You're to blame for this whole climate problem. We don't want to have anything to do with you." That was them. Then I moved to California and I met the Sunrise people here in the San Francisco Bay Area and found myself on a march with hundreds of them and with a number of elders too, because they had a different attitude. They weren't into blame. They were into action. They were into collaboration. That's the key.
Yes, collaboration is the
I
key.
love it. That's why I support your organization.
Yes, last comment from Dave is hope without courage is not a call to action.
I agree with that. And people have differing degrees of courage. There are people today who've lost their jobs, particularly the federal government. Thousands of people are losing their jobs. Imagine yourself in those situations. Okay, they'll find other jobs, probably, but all sorts of hopes have been dashed. So we don't want to send people the wrong message. We don't send them a message, cheer up, things will be better, work harder. No, it's not always possible. Not always possible for me to install solar heating in my condo. There are limits. We have to accept the limits, recognize them. Peter Drucker, the great management theorist, I was profoundly influenced by his books. What he said is, feed the opportunities, starve the problems. He didn't say deny the problems. He said, starve the problems. Don't get bogged down on them. Don't focus on them. Feed the opportunities. Everybody, without exception, can find an opportunity.
That's a great, great line. Feed the opportunities.
Yeah.
So, a comment from John. He says, I'm a city council member in Petaluma, California, for purpose of making change for climate. We have a climate action plan and active transportation plan with housing elements to create affordable housing and a homeless sheltering program. We have several nonprofits helping make these changes. Petaluma has a book club using What If We Get It Right, which is a recording of conversations of activists doing work in this area. Lots can be done locally.
It's true. I think it's wonderful to read those books. And the final conclusion, reading the book about what works, this is the key element. Think globally, but act locally. That's a motto that people in the environmental movement use. Think globally, but act locally. Why is that important? Because if you think globally only, you'll be depressed because you're going to hear about all the bad things all over the world. I was in New Orleans just after Hurricane Katrina, a terrible disaster. I was working for AARP at the time. They sent me down. I met with all the home care agencies in the state of Louisiana because two-thirds of the people who died in Hurricane Katrina, two-thirds of them were over the age of 65. It didn't have to be that way. But future events will happen like that because of rising sea levels. So they wanted some guidance. We need to look at what will affect us. There's all kinds of things that we can do, but you have to ask yourself, what can I do to act locally?
So John from Petaluma also adds the North Bay Climate Action Group talks weekly and has a table at events to educate and motivate. Most participants are over 65.
I love
Well,
it.
the wonderful thing about people over 65 is that we have more time to invest. So to use this time in a meaningful way makes total sense. There's lots of work to do. Donna says there are many little things we can do. For instance, organic foods, because it is helpful to the soil, not just because it may be healthier for you. So it's also how to take care of the earth. That's part of climate action. Then she also says another group is Thousand Grandmothers who work on climate change also in Berkeley and other places.
That's right. A major group. I'm on their lists. I get their material all the time. I totally support them. And I'm equally interested in regenerative agriculture. I work with Monica Eastway in Big Sur. And I'm going to be working with her on a tour to see the natural environment in that area. But she works all over the country, all over the world. And now she's being retrained to become a regenerative farmer herself. Again, not for everybody. I spent most of my life in New York City. I'm not a farmer. But I can help her, and I am helping her and other people like her. As for organic food, yes, the San Mateo College vendor fair for agriculture. I will be there with vendors from all over the state of California. People will be in San Mateo who come here from Ventura County near Los Angeles, from Sacramento, which is not too far, and other places all over. So organic agriculture is possible. It's not as cheap as the other, but it's healthier.
So I feel like, just now in these conversations with our audience and all the different initiatives which have come up also in your answers, there is actually a lot happening.
There is. There's a lot.
So there's a lot happening already. We started on this notion that people are not listening, but it seems people are listening. It's just their stories are not told enough.
They're listening, and what's required is bottom-up action. And that is how change happens, from the bottom up. And it's not necessarily reported right away in the Washington Post or the Los Angeles Times or CBS or ABC or any of these places. It's not necessarily reported there at all, but it's reported in other places. And part of my job is to let people know what those other places are, because you can subscribe to those things on Substack and many places. Doesn't cost any money, and you can get the message out. It's happening. I'm actually very hopeful, in the sense of optimistic, that the crisis that's happening, the meta crisis, some people would call it, of many things going on, whether it's government or what's happening in climate or what's happening in the economy, it's true. A lot of bad things and turbulent things are happening. That's why we need to join with others. We need to join with others to help one another. We can't be alone. People sometimes say, well, what can one person do? And the answer is, one person alone can't do anything. But one person linked with many other people can do lots of things. That's how the civil rights movement happened. That's how women's liberation happened. That's how everything good that's happened in our history has happened. It's happened from the bottom up. And only later on, people said, oh, yeah, I agreed with it all along, or oh, yeah, I knew it was a good thing. No, they didn't. It required courage. It required getting out in front. So I encourage everybody on this to do that. Find that one thing that you can do and do it.
And that's totally, totally true. Thank you, Rick. We'll have each other's back. Anne says, thank you, Rick, for writing this book. I have ordered my copy and look forward to being inspired to do what I can. Thank you for challenging us to take action with hope. I just feel that this is a great note to end on. This was a truly inspiring conversation. Thank you so much, Rick. Thank you all for joining today and stay tuned for the next program. We
Thank you
will.
for doing what you do with At Home with Growing Older. I'll keep working with you as much as possible to make it sustainable.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody.
I'll say goodbye then. So long.
This episode of At Home On Air was produced by the At Home with Growing Older team. We could not host these conversations without the generosity of our marvelous and passionate guests and hosts. Thank you for sharing your personal and professional insights. Thank you to our live audience for your thoughtful contributions. To subscribe to this podcast and for more information, visit us at homewithgrowingolder.org. At Home with Growing Older strives to educate, inspire, and connect people across generations and disciplines to re-envision and improve the experiences of later life. Don't forget to subscribe and tune in for the next episode.